Some of the other patterns that I see are self-limitation and self-sabotage. So when I'm sitting with a client, I pay attention to all of the language because words are very powerful. And I listen for, I can't, I won't, I don't, I'm not. And I call that out. I'm a tough mama bear and I call that out. And I have a healthy belief in self-fulfilling prophecy. And if we don't think we're going to achieve something, we're not going to.
Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome, my friends, to another episode of Life After Corporate. And if you're new to our show, welcome home. This is where you get the unvarnished truth about what it takes to really grow and scale a successful coaching or consulting business. And I am super excited for our conversation with our guest today because nowhere have I seen anyone tackle the topic of your financial money mindset and really have a step-by-step plan for psychologically getting out of your own way. So our guest today is Joyce Martyr. She is a psychotherapist. She's an entrepreneur. She's a speaker and author of The Financial Mindset Fix. Welcome to Life After Corporate, Joyce.
Thank you so much for having me, Deb, and for the kind introduction. I'm excited.
I'm excited too. So I saw Joyce for the very first time last October when she was keynoting at a conference for the Dames, which I think I've mentioned in this podcast before, a wonderful organization of women entrepreneurs who are growing and scaling their business. And there was just something magnetic. And I think the way I describe it is so insightful and yet safe at the same time, to really start taking an honest look about your mindset around finances. I was really impressed with that. So today we're going to talk about that connection between psychology and your relationship with money. And last year we've had several episodes about mindset. We've had several episodes about finance and relationship with debt and abundance. This is the first time that we've actually put the two together. So buckle up, my friends. I think you're in for a highly insightful conversation. And by the end, you'll be running to your local bookstore, your favorite place to order books to get the financial mindset fix. So Joyce, I want to start with a little bit of your journey from psychotherapist to building up your practice and the decisions you made that led up to writing this book and launching your speaking career. Can you share a little bit about your inside story?
Absolutely. So I'm really passionate about destigmatizing mental health and promoting access to care. And when I was in graduate school at Northwestern University, the first day of my program, the professor said, "Well, you certainly didn't come into this field for the money." And I thought, uh-oh, I just signed $50,000 of student loans and how am I going to support myself? And so I chose to disregard that and to believe that I could make more money with this degree. And I wanted to start an insurance-friendly counseling practice to make therapy accessible and affordable. So I started it with $500 and $50,000 of student loans and one client at a time, one therapist at a time. And we grew tremendously because of the need. I think we all need therapy at different points in our lives. And most of us want to use our insurance because we can't afford $150 out of pocket. And so the business grew tremendously, very quickly. And unfortunately, a few years in, I ended up in cash flow hell. The bigger the business got, the more money was outstanding in insurance payments. And it was fine when it was a few thousand dollars, and it was not fine when it was hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wow.
And I dealt with insomnia and panic attacks and a lot of shame around my debt. And I felt like I wore this mask to the world around me that my business was successful, but financially I was really, really struggling. And I actually lost my business partner. She left because of all of the stress, and half of our staff left, taking their clients with them. And that experience broke me open to accessing support and applying the skills that I learned through my clinical training to my own money mindset. So we therapists often specialize in our own issues. And so I used skills from mindfulness, from cognitive behavioral therapy, from family systems therapy to save myself and save my business. And 7 years later, I was able to successfully sell my business for a seven-figure multiple, something I would have never imagined possible. And it actually was an eight-figure exit.
Wow.
So my passion is to really share with others what I've learned and how I've helped my clients transform their financial mindset and really their lives.
Yeah, there's so much tied up in financial money mindset. And I love how you described it, because so many of us do this, right? We are all together on the outside. We are so successful, but we don't want anyone to see the dirty laundry of the money mindset or the financial habits that we've gotten into. So your book shares an incredible level of insight. Can you share with us what some of the most prominent patterns are, those kind of like hidden on the inside, you can't see them on the outside, traps that particularly entrepreneurs or women entrepreneurs might fall into? I'm not sure there's a difference between women and men, but what are some of the traps that you see women entrepreneurs fall into when it comes to money and mindset?
I do think there is a difference for women and men, because I think as women, we're socialized to be people pleasers and good girls, and we still earn 79 cents on the dollar. We deal with sexism and discrimination in the workplace and financially. And so we've received different messages from our families of origin and from our culture about what it means to be a woman in relation to money. And so some of the common themes, the biggest one is the connection between self-worth and net worth. And I noticed in my practice that as my clients started making progress in therapy, they started earning more money. And client after client was coming into session reporting raises and promotions, and that they were starting their own businesses or side hustle. And at this point in my practice, we weren't even talking about money, so I was confused. But in therapy, we're always working on our underlying self-esteem. And as we feel better about ourselves and we're aligned with our unique gifts and talents, we feel more confident and empowered. And so we put ourselves out in the world differently. We're more assertive and we're willing to expand our comfort zones and negotiate. Some of the other patterns that I see are self-limitation and self-sabotage. So when I'm sitting with a client, I pay attention to all of the language, because words are very powerful. And I listen for, I can't, I won't, I don't, I'm not. And I call that out.
Yeah.
I'm a tough mama bear and I call that out. And I have a healthy belief in self-fulfilling prophecy. And if we don't think we're going to achieve something, we're not going to.
Absolutely. 100%. I frequently say, so I'm a business coach, and one of the things you're sure to do when you work with me is raise your prices. And in that discussion, there comes a lot of like, oh, I can't, or I don't know how. And I say, hey, listen, no one's buying your self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, that's where this is coming from, this inability to charge higher fees, to make offers, to prospect and confidently invite people into your world to work with you. And it's crippling financially. So I
wanted to share, while you mentioned that, my favorite experience of that was the first time that I was invited to give an out-of-state keynote. I asked my colleague Ross, who is a successful author and speaker, what I should charge. And he told me a rate that I was so uncomfortable with. But as an experiment, I borrowed Ross's self-esteem and I told the client company that amount. And they said, no problem. How would you like us to pay you? And I called Ross back and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I can't believe I'm receiving that amount for a 45-minute keynote. And he said, 45-minute keynote? I gave you my full day rate.
Oh, how funny is that?
Isn't that great? And so the most we get is what we ask for. And so much of we have discomfort with that. We feel like we're being greedy, we're being narcissistic, we're being selfish. There's these narratives that we have in our head, and we need to value ourselves, especially as female business owners.
Especially, or we get our heads in our customers' wallets, whether it's an individual who you feel can't afford it, or it's a company that's a nonprofit, they don't have a big budget. And all of this mind messery kind of gets in the way of you making the right request and receiving the money, which is, you know, we're going to dive into or peel back some of these layers around why this is so important in just a minute. But it's keeping you broke. It's keeping you burnt out. It's really a new self-imposed glass ceiling. You know, maybe you hit a glass ceiling in corporate. Maybe you are only earning 79 cents to the dollar. But guess what? In entrepreneurship, it's 30. So it just gets amplified even deeper, louder. So let's talk about some of the ways that we can identify when we're playing out a scene from the past that's inhibiting our success in the present.
Well, gosh, my book really guides you through so many, but I think number one is to reflect on your role in your family of origin, because we often unconsciously repeat what's familiar until we become aware and we choose something different. And oftentimes we come into our career because we had a certain role in the family dynamic. And so getting clear on what themes and patterns do you recreate over and over again in your relationships, both at home and at work. And then doing a deeper dive into your family of origins, ancestral patterns around money, and intergenerational financial trauma. So my dad grew up during the Great Depression. His parents were immigrants. And so what got passed down to me was a scarcity mindset around money. Understandably, that there's not enough resources to go around, so we need to be fearful and competitive with others. And so by doing that intergenerational work, we can have more insight as to why we have some of our belief systems. And according to CBT, our thoughts precede our emotions and behaviors. So if we think that people with a lot of money are bad or evil, then we're going to unconsciously push money away. And I did that. My own CPA said, Joyce, you're not running a charity to employ therapists. You deserve to make a profit. And like you said, I wanted to be a helper. I wanted to be of service to the world. But he was like, you're not going to have a business if it's not profitable. And we can help more when we have more. Once my business was stronger and it was more profitable, I could pay people better. I could give to charities and have more sliding fee and pro bono services. So we want to do this exploration. We also want to look at our financial boundaries in relationships. And I've counseled a lot of women and couples. And unfortunately, I think many of us struggle with our financial literacy and really learning more about money and money management. It's going to help us feel more empowered. And then learning how to communicate in our relationships, both at home and at work, and set limits, whether it's with our spouses, our business partners, our clients, our vendors, our children. Those are important for us to maintain our own financial health.
Let's talk about some of those financial boundaries with your spouse, for instance. What are some of the symptoms, if you will, of leaky boundaries?
Oh my gosh. Well, there can be a lack of financial transparency in couples where there's some level of dishonesty about debt or assets, some lack of shared information, and this can really erode trust in the relationship. And I've seen this in countless different ways, people having a secret credit card or getting a bonus and not reporting it to their partner, or in extreme cases, even having another partner that they're financially supporting. And so that's an important, to be honest, to have a system, to agree on that system, And there's no right or wrong way, whether you share everything or you live like roommates and you have your finances separate. As long as you both know what the system is and you agree and you're honest and you have integrity with each other, and then that you have regular meetings and check-ins and you know your roles with your finances, you know, who's paying the bills, who is reviewing the investment accounts, and how are you collaborating and talking about those things together. And I think having a financial advisor, even if you or your spouse is a financial expert, is important to have a neutral mediator. And I blog for Money Geek and Choosing Therapy, and I have a bunch of articles on how to talk about money with your partner. So I would check those out if you're interested in learning more.
Oh, absolutely. We'll put that link in the show notes for those who want to go further, because it's just good relationship hygiene. It's like the financial hygiene. You want to have clear communications and all of that. I'm also curious about what are some of the non-obvious patterns that you find with clients who look like they have it all together, but are kind of a mess financially. Is there anything that's kind of hidden below the surface? Your book goes very, very deep. What's one slice you want to pull out of that that most people don't look at?
Well, I think a lot of us are financially avoidant. I know I certainly was, and we can go into financial denial.
Yeah.
And stick our heads in the sand. And sometimes it's scary and overwhelming to look at your statements, at your debt, at your business plan. And so I think many of us avoid that. And we just keep working hard in our business, hoping that the money is going to catch up. And that was my biggest mistake. I did not seek proper business and financial consultation because I was afraid. I was afraid that somebody was going to tell me my business model didn't work, and that was my dream. And I was ashamed. I didn't want to show anyone my debt and how much I was struggling. But once I hit that rock bottom, I had to eat a piece of humble pie. And instead of telling everyone I was fine, I told everyone, wow, I really messed up and I could really use your help. And help came out of the woodwork. And even my neighbor said, you need a business valuation. And that's how my ship started to turn around. Was even though I was in cash flow hell, my business had tremendous value. And he helped me really scale it and grow it so that I could successfully sell it at a later point. So not seeking help and being in denial because of fear or shame is total self-sabotage. And I see a lot of women do that. I also see codependency. And codependency is when we detrimentally caretake at the expense of our own well-being. And we can do that with our partners, our staff, our children. I know I put everyone else first and I ended up burnt out and exhausted. And so healthy boundaries are fueling yourself first so that when we're happy, everyone else is happy at home and at work. So it's a mindset shift. I know I really struggled with it because it felt narcissistic and selfish. But again, when we have more, we can help more.
Yeah. From the energetic perspective of you can't pour from an empty cup, as well as the financial perspective, is you can't always have an open wallet dishing out your cash flow to everyone else around you, your partner, your children, your help. You know, everyone is going to want more, which brings me into the chapter that was hardest for me to read, honestly, which was about budgeting. So inside scoop, my dad was a CFO. He was an accountant. And so what did I rebel against? The budget having anything to do with not having enough or having to track. And so while I think it's easier when you're responsible for a business to work to a budget and understand you have to put money aside for taxes and for payroll and for all the things, somehow when money can come in financially on the personal side, especially if you're doing well, it's like, oh, if there's money in the bank, I'll spend it. So what is the value of actually having a budget, and why is it worth doing? And how do you get over the psychological barriers of building a budget?
Yeah, that is difficult. And it's in the chapter titled Responsibility, take the reins of your financial life. And many of us blame others for our financial stress, and we really need to become the author of our own financial story, not only the protagonist. And budgeting keeps us rooted and grounded in reality. And so it's really an important practice. And in the psychology of money, there are common biases. And one of them is the present bias of money. And the idea that we just kind of focus on the here and now and forget to think about the future. And we might be young and healthy now, and the money is coming in, and we take that for granted and don't plan for the future. And we know that most people facing retirement in our country are not prepared for that. So as part of our own self-love and financial self-care, we need a financial advisor who's going to help us look long-term. And I am a spender. I am the first to admit it. And so my advisor manages a lot of my cash. So he has created forced savings and forced investments for me so that I don't even see the cash. I don't have access to the cash. And we make sure I have liquidity, that I have cash set aside for an emergency, but I have to ask him permission for it because we both don't trust me.
I love that. We both don't trust me. And so I think that is just such a beautiful, I want to have that be a throwaway phrase. You know, if you don't trust yourself with money, and let's look in the mirror, and a lot of the exercises in your book, it's like 25 therapy sessions in the book, if you go through it the right way and take each one to heart, it's that hard look in the mirror, like, do I really trust myself with money based on my past behavior? And, you know, many people will find themselves in the same pattern over and over again. It's like, even if you want to change and say, oh, well, I want to do things differently, then 6 months later, you find yourself in the same spot. It's like, well, wait a minute, you know, something needs to shift. And sometimes it's going for help and looking for support from the outside. And I love the way you just phrased that. We both don't trust me.
And I love apps like Rocket Money, where you connect all of your financial accounts. It helps me understand my cash flow. It lets me know my net worth at any given point, and also keeps me aware of my spending. And so having reporting from apps like that, or Mint.com, or even QuickBooks reports. I remember back in the day, I used Microsoft Money, and it made a pie chart that showed that I was spending a third of my money on my rent, a third on my student loans, and a third on like my hair. So that was not to scale. So yeah, we need accountability, whether it's through those software systems and or from professionals. And the budget, you know, we want to make sure that we're saving and investing, but that we're also treating ourselves, because some people can be, they hoard or they become miserly because they're afraid of the future. And money has flow. We want to find that healthy balance between spending and saving.
Yeah, you have to, because as a business owner, you know, there are times when, and you spoke about this in the book as well, where, you know, we're doing all the things, either because we have this fear of investing and getting help, or we feel like we do, no one will do it as good as we are. And that's the entrepreneur burnout cycle, because you will hit burnout. You need to be able to invest in your business and ask for help. In the book, you have these series of wheels, and if anyone's been through coaching, most would look at them like a wheel of life, but each one, this is what I mean by peeling back the layers of the onion. Each one is a very micro layer of your psychology around money in a particular aspect of your life. So, and you are relentless. You are relentless in making people look at their shit. I gotta let you say, oh my God, she's going everywhere.
It's so funny because my therapy clients, I've been told more than once that I'm a pit bull. I am, it's my tough love, it's my mama bear. And I'm so passionate about the work. And I know that our blind spots can cause self-sabotage. And I've had the blessing of learning from thousands of clients over the past 25 years. And each chapter is one of the mindsets that I've realized leads to holistic success. And I used a PhD researcher who backed that up, and each of those mindsets leads to improved mental health and financial health. And those wheel exercises really are self-evaluation tools on those skills. And we then can identify our dents in our wheels. We're all works in progress. We're not perfect. And so really, this program is a way of life. It's not a get rich quick. It's a way of working on yourself and your psychology and your well-being so that you can blossom into your highest and greatest self personally and professionally and financially.
And I can't emphasize that enough, because I can see the work that you've done, the experiential work, the spiritual work, the psychology work. You mentioned CBT before, which is cognitive behavioral therapy. I'm sure you've also done some work in neuroplasticity and rewiring your thoughts. There's many reframes in the book as well that are super helpful. And that's why I'm such a huge fan, Joyce. Like, literally, I have interviewed Barbara Hewson on this show. I've interviewed Tracy Litt, many mindset coaches. You really have embodied all of that philosophy, the psychology, the spirituality around your relationship with money to give people a path to true abundance. And I love that you're a pit bull and that you're relentless and ask about these very pointed questions about our thoughts and behaviors, because those wheels are like a visual mirror that help increase your awareness and connect you compassionately. The other thing I love about your book too is there's no judgment. There's a lot of compassion about, you know, you're just human and here's a way to think differently about this, or here's a way to behave differently about this. And so if you feel like there's a piece of your psychology around money, I'm speaking to our listeners now, that you're avoiding, you don't have to just open it up into the daylight and show it to everyone else. This is a very private, very personal, journal-based practice where you can get these insights and support from Joyce in a virtual way. And maybe you want to get support from Joyce in a very personal way, because, and we'll talk about how to do that before we close. So for many, many business owners like us, we're high achievers, we're very likely to burn out. In chapter 5, you talk about essence and how the ego is killing cash karma. I would love for you to talk a little bit more about that and what that means to women entrepreneurs.
Absolutely. Well, if you buy into the idea that we're mind, body, and spirit, our ego is our mind's understanding of ourselves, and our essence is our spirit or our soul or our authentic self. And we all have egos as part of the human condition, and they can cause us to become defensive and also, you know, miserable, angry, whatever it might be. And so our essence is our true light, our real authentic self. And we want to shine that light brightly. And our ego, I love the work of Eckhart Tolle. And he says, whenever we feel either superior or inferior to others, that's the ego in us. And so in that chapter, I talk about the two sides of ego, and they're the diva and the doormat. And the diva, and dudes can be divas too, is arrogant, grandiose, might live beyond her means financially, and might be aggressive with her boundaries. And the doormat tends to be an under-earner and a people pleaser, and allows her own boundaries to be compromised. So we can err on either side at various points in our lives or in different relationships. And so by practicing assertiveness and working our self-worth, we can find that happy medium where we demonstrate respect for ourselves and others. We have empathy for others. We're conscious of the big picture. We have self-awareness, and we communicate assertively. And that's really important, because if we err on the diva or doormat side, there are financial implications. And the diva might look flashy and might, you know, dress with the Prada purse or whatever, but might have tremendous debt or lawsuits because she's you know, put people off or something like that. So it's really important to keep our egos in check. Business is all about relationships. And I believe in a spiritual web. I'm glad that you picked up on the spiritual undertone of the book. And we're all interconnected. So how we present ourselves to others is going to directly impact our business financially.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you're a doormat, you're likely to undercharge, not feel uncomfortable making offers, be unwilling to negotiate. And I loved your story about who is your guy friend that told you to charge?
Oh, Ross. Yes.
Ross. So we've named him Bobby in my coaching circles, like call up your inner Bobby, the guy who would charge so much more.
Yeah.
Because it's really just perpetuating that self-sabotage, that negative self-esteem, and just keeping you in a space where your light can't shine. You're not able to fulfill your life's purpose or your divine mission, as the case may be. So the financial mindset fix leaves no stone unturned and very directly and lovingly invites you to take a close look at who you are financially and how that is serving you or not, and gives you a step-by-step way to improve your life, your happiness, and your wealth. And so I saw you in real life, but I didn't have room in my suitcase to take the book home with me, so I ordered it afterwards online. Where's the best place for our listeners to order your book?
Thank you so much, Deb, and thank you for your kind feedback. It fills my heart. The book is available on Amazon. It's hardcover, Kindle, and Audible. And it's also available at other major book retailers. And I'm so excited. It's been published in Spanish, Korean, and Taiwanese. And it's won 8 book awards and 6 honorable mentions from global book festivals. So I'm excited that it's resonating with people around the world. And I hope it's helpful.
It's an amazing book. It really is. It's magic. And you poured your soul into it, and that's evident. So I'm happy that you are reaping the rewards of this great work and have a great speaking career. Do you still deliver therapy to people as well? Are you still a therapist?
I am not. I retired a couple of years ago as a gift to myself after more than 25 years of counseling. I do some limited coaching, but my jam is keynote speaking and corporate training. I want to reach wider audiences, so I keynote across the country and give webinars for corporations and federal agencies and largest associations and sell my book, and I'm working on my next book, and I love it. I'm in my second entrepreneurial endeavor, and it feels really great.
Well, we wish you much success and thank you for sharing your insights and wisdom with our listeners here today, Joyce.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you, Deb. I had so much fun.
All right. That's it for now, my friends. Go pick up the Financial Mindset Fix and let's start this year off on a new note and a new relationship with our bank account. That's it for now, my friends. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.